Welcome to Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Every month we take a deep dive into the history, social issues, and theology of a different cult. From the infamous to the lesser known, we examine how these groups operate, why people are drawn to them, and how they differ from true Christian teachings.
Through careful research and analysis, we aim to shed light on the complex and often controversial world of cults, and to provide insight into the unique challenges that pose to families and individuals and society as a whole. So whether you're a curious bystander, a former member, or simply interested in the intersection of religion and culture, we invite you to join us on this journey of discovery and understanding.
Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to stay up to date on our latest content. And as always, thank you for joining us on this exploration of faith, frauds, and falsehoods.
Nice. So as always, before we get started, let's make sure that we remind everyone that the things that we talk about are purely our own opinions and don't reflect that of our employers or our churches. So, Matt, what are we talking about tonight?
Today we are doing our last episode on the FLDS, the Fundamentalist Latter-day
FLDS.
Saints.
FLDS, that's right.
This is our
new segment that we've added this year. This is probably my favorite segment.
Yes. So we've talked about the history. We've talked about their social mm-hmm. issues. We talked about their theology. What do you want to talk about tonight, Brian?
I want to talk about our response to the FLDS. Right? What do they have wrong? Really, I searched today to find something that they had right, but it was mostly just what do they have wrong.
Dude, they got the bomb haircut.
Why is
okay?
it wrong? I know it, right?
And look, them homemade dresses. Look, Target is now carrying very similar designs. They are trendsetters.
True.
Trendsetters. Yep. And pastels are in. It is around the Easter season right now, and pastels are in.
That's right. Christ is risen.
I'm not sure what that has to do with pastels, but hey, pastels and Easter seem to go well together.
Yep.
Beyond that, I'm not sure what else we have here.
Right. What are you fidgeting with?
Oh.
Every time.
Y'all have to understand, I have to have something in my hands going. My mind has multiple streams. Yep. It's a multi-threaded process.
That's right.
And if you just use one at a time, it's just not going to fully use things.
Oh, dear. So I sat down yesterday and today, and I wrote what's going to wind up being our blog post, right? You know, we try to do a blog post for every episode or every series of episodes, every cult that we talk about over at faithfraudsfalsehoods.com.
Faithfraudsfalsehoods.com.
We did this episode on ChatGPT a couple of weeks ago, and I've really taken to liking it. And liking what it can do.
Let's clarify.
But
the episode we did on ChatGPT was what if you use ChatGPT to create a cult? And we created a cult with it and scared ourselves and decided to not go further. But that
true.
Is not
and
what
we've had people contact us.
Oh, yes. People have contacted us and upset
yep.
because they wanted to believe in ChatGPT as their Lord and yep. creator. And yeah. Yep. So, but let's clarify here. You are not saying you're used ChatGPT to create a cult here.
No. I sat down and I wrote. I basically wrote out the discussion that I would have right with someone talking about the response. It'll be the blog post. You'll see where I've even thrown in different questions and stuff, just kind of to myself as I was writing. And so then I took all of this, right? And I copied and pasted it into ChatGPT and said, now give us an outline for our podcast episode. And it gave us a perfect little outline of all the things for us to talk about tonight. It's great. Love it.
Yeah. So when I talk to myself, I'm usually like, hey, self. And myself says, huh? I said, hey, what you been thinking about this? I try to make it an interactive conversation.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so ChatGPT here, you just use it as a summary tool. So that's right. That's pretty valid. Look, I, for one, welcome our new robotic overlords.
Matt.
Just saying.
I know. So, response, right? Response is a big deal. this was a hard one, right? This was a hard group to respond to, because there were so many things that we could choose to respond to.
Well, and let's talk about that. Let's talk about how, so with the response, you decided right off the bat, let's just do it the wrong way. And we're just not going to talk about polygamy.
Correct.
So that kind of seems like the thing for FLDS, right? Like when people hear about FLDS, they think about polygamy. A lot of these documentaries and a lot of these books that have come out from the former wives and stuff. Matter of fact, you have very few men who have come out of the FLDS who are talking about it. You have some.
Right.
There's definitely some, but there's very few. Yep. The ones who are getting all the publicity is from the females because of the polygamy. And the reason they left the LDS in the first place was over the issue of polygamy. And as we've discussed, they're not the only people who did that. There were several breakoff groups over the issue of polygamy. But why did you decide not to go with polygamy?
Well, partly for the things that you just said, right? Everyone is talking about it.
And we've talked about it in our previous episodes.
We talked about it in the previous episodes. We talked about the topic we're going to focus on tonight in the previous episode, but we talked more on the plural marriage than on this. It's a big thing right now that everyone is talking about. So, you know me, I can't stick with the social norms and the trends. We would probably get better ratings if we did talk plural marriage, polygamy. But for me, right, as I've read through their stuff and looked at their teachings, it all really boils down to really one piece, but it's all kind of built on top of one. Their one man doctrine, right, that Uncle Roy, right, decided to enact in the early 80s, in which there's only one person in the entire group at any time that speaks for God, right? This one prophet, this one person. And it's that piece that I think, believe it or not, does far more damage to people spiritually, emotionally, psychologically than polygamy.
Well, and it does relate to polygamy because through the one man doctrine, that means that the prophet who we're discussing would be here. And the prophet was that you talked about Uncle Roy, went later Rulon, and then Warren.
Yep,
they're not the only ones in the succession, but Uncle Roy Johnson really started pushing this one man doctrine thing. And I know you're going to talk about the history of that in just a second, but I want to mention that it relates to polygamy very heavily because that means one man has the power of sealing, which basically he's the guy that hitches folks, right? And since he's the only one who can seal people, he's the one in marriage, he's the one choosing the brides. He's the one who has to do the marriages, which is part of the reason the FLDS have not had marriages because Warren's in prison now. And part of what Warren got in trouble for in the first place, because they had this trailer in Las Vegas and he was bringing people out there to marry him. Even when Rulon was in power but mentally incompetent, Warren was actually in power and he would just symbolically have Rulon do the sealing and such. So it does come back to the polygamy. It weighs heavily on everything. And let's remember that their salvation comes through this. So their salvation comes through one man, the prophet.
Yep. Yeah. So for me, right, you know, yes, as much as socially, culturally, polygamy is an issue, right, it's not nearly as detrimental as this one man doctrine is.
I would say they're intertwined. I hate to downplay the polygamy thing.
Oh yeah. I mean, it stems from it. Right. But you could have polygamy without the one man doctrine. Right.
You could, but not in the FLDS sense, because it is so important and tied together, I think is where you're going. Right.
Right. Yeah. But you can't have salvation, right, without the one man.
And according to their teachings.
And that's a big deal, right, according to their teachings, right? We'll get to that. But So that to me is a big deal, right? And believe it or not, there's a lot of churches, actual Christian churches, that kind of subscribe to this idea of the one man doctrine, right? Whether they're actually attributing it in that same way.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they subscribe to the one man doctrine, but I would say that
they're teaching something very, very similar.
Well, and let's just be honest, whenever we present this type of thing and you say, oh, okay, so salvation comes through one man, a lot of people think, I mean, Christians, we believe salvation's in Jesus Christ alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Well, there's one man right there. The difference is that Jesus is not just a man. He's all man and all God.
Right.
And so that's the difference there. But from an outsider who doesn't believe Jesus to be deity, they see a teaching like that, especially back then when they heard a teaching like that and he says stuff like that, this sure sounds a lot like the one man doctrine type stuff, where it's all through one man. So when you hear something like this, it's super important that you kind of investigate. Well, I see that completely valid through Jesus Christ. You know, that's different because he's Jesus Christ, which explains part of the whole role of the prophet. The prophet believes they're the successor of Jesus Christ, right?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, to say that salvation comes through Christ alone is, I don't want to get into all the Greek, but
our
FLDS sense, right? I know we need to create a Brian's Greek corner hour or segment where we can talk about all the Greek words, because I've got a couple of Greek words in our discussion for tonight. But
that actually might not be a bad idea.
Talk a little more about that. But in the FLDS sense, right, it is not salvation in the same way as it is with Christ, right? It's not the prophet is saving you necessarily. It's the prophet is giving you access to salvation, which is a whole different ballgame than just Christ saves you.
Right. And I realize we can only go so far into their theology with this even, but let's make it real clear that their salvation, you know, Christian salvation is an eternity with God. LDS and FLDS salvation is to eventually rise to the rank of God.
Right.
Or rise back to the rank of God, something like that. And that's kind of a different thing, a different goal. Your eventual, if you can make it all the way, and they're never really clear if you can or can't, because most don't, then you literally get to go be God of another planet.
Yep.
So while it looks like very Christian on the outside, it's very not. It's a very different end goal. We're running a different race. And so that's important to know. The access thing applies very, very much, because it's not just the key to salvation. It's he gives you access to the possibility of it.
Right.
It's not a guarantee. It's not, well, if the prophet says you, then you have, no, it's the possibility of it. They're not real. They're real big about the rules, but they're not real big about, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 every time, but they never, 1 + 1 never = 3, you know? I'm getting around what I'm trying to say here, but the prophet is supreme power, and because your salvation does depend on the prophet can cut off your access as well.
I love it when I know that you read my post. So you said something here.
I didn't read your post.
I don't know if you...
Sorry.
Okay. Well, you said something, and you know it pushes us into issue one, right? In our outline.
I read the outline.
There is a difference... There you go. There is a difference between authority and power. Right. And I think we mentioned this during our theology segment. authority is granted, right? It's given either by someone who is above you, and you're given the ability to act within their authority and their power, right? Or it's given by someone who is below you to have authority over themselves.
Okay. Right?
Authority is one thing, and power is something completely different. Power is seized. It is taken by force. And, or it is, right, naturally owned, right, in the case of God. God is the only one all-powerful. But the prophet in the FLDS church, all of the text, all of the discussion is around the prophet having power, not authority. And if you go back and you look, go ahead.
I feel like we've gone.
Because I'm fixing to get another Greek.
I feel like we've gone on and we skipped something that we need to roll back to real quick. We talked because this is going to apply to what you're
talking about. Yeah, we'll stop before we get to the Greek corner.
Right. This is going to apply to what you're going to talk about, though, with the authority and powers. We talked about the history of the one-man doctrine. But we started with Uncle Roy. But that's not where it started. That's where it restarted, right?
Right, it's where it restarted.
So I think it's important that we mention that. So tell us a little bit more about that, about it restarted with him. But the LDS Church had had this teaching before.
So it's really weird, right? The LDS Church did have a similar teaching. You can find snippets of it throughout the Doctrines and Covenants, which is canonized scripture for the LDS Church. But nothing as firmly laid out as it is in the FLDS.
But Warren, or not Warren, because Joseph Smith and Brigham Young both were pre one man doctrine. Brigham Young, yes, less so, even though he was more powerful.
Right. Well, it's weird, right? Because their whole idea of apostolic succession, which we'll get into later, really was thrown on its head when Joseph and Hiram, is his brother Hiram? Is that right? Smith?
Sounds right.
I think that's right. When they were murdered, right? There was no line of succession defined, right? And so the Quorum of 12 kind of stepped up and took it on. And it was sometime later, after Brigham Young even, that this idea of one man kind of made its way back, and then it was pulled back to the side, just like polygamy was. So it never really took the hold in the LDS church in the same way that it did for the FLDS.
The FLDS took it further, but they definitely had the prophet, and the prophet having more
control. Oh, yeah, the prophet's still there, right? It's just there's still the prophet and then the 12 that surround him. As that plurality of elders.
And I think that's important that with the FLDS, they had been a split off of the LDS for a little while, and they had had a small group. I forget the name of that group. And Uncle Roy was the president and the prophet of that group. Mm-hmm. But he was not the end all be all, but he became that. Correct. He basically just declared himself that. Another thing important is that Rulon actually wrote out, changed their history. So originally, Uncle Roy had published a history of the secession of the prophets, okay? And they had, this is what they taught the kids, Rulon, and then more so Warren Jeffs, especially since he was teaching the children. Rulon changed it and Warren taught it. He changed the secession and took several of their founders out. That's when we were doing research about who's the founders of the FLDS, it was a little hard to figure out because the FLDS resources leave out several names. They rewrote their history to change their secession because they left out anybody who didn't teach this one-man doctrine thing once Uncle Roy started doing it. So there was some time where it was taught, maybe not as strictly practiced, but it was definitely taught.
Right.
And then there's time when it wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of this committee that was running the church. And then there's time when, back with what it was. So they took those people in between and just cut them out of the history. So the FLDS people themselves don't know the history because it was changed, and that's what they were taught. And remember that Warren ran the school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting how this plays off with other cults where they change even their own internal history of what things have happened. in order to make the leader look more powerful or more mystic, more in control of things. You know, remember how with Charles Manson, you know, his family history and stuff like that, he was real vague about that. And a lot of his followers thought different things. He told them he did this and this, and he didn't. Same thing with Jim Jones. You know, his history was entirely different than what it was told. Same things with Tony Alamo. Right. Same things with the Heaven's Gates people. T and O. You know, their family history was this, but they changed it for their followers. Well, same thing happened starting with Uncle Roy and into Rulon and definitely with Warren. They changed the history of their whole group in order to centralize power on one person. Also, we need to get back to what you were saying, but also one more thing is that Rulon, so Uncle Roy introduced it more. Rulon really started pushing it, and then Rulon was never supposed to die.
Right.
He was not supposed to die. And so Warren had to really scramble when Rulon died. When he was sick, Warren could just run things. But once he died, what did they do? And the church validly didn't know. And there was a little bit of a split at that point because some people didn't accept Warren's being the new leader. Most did, though. So it's important to know that. Yeah. So they did all that, all to push this one-bed doctrine, all to basically seize power into their own family. And Uncle Roy was an uncle to them. And then Rulon, and then Warren. This was one family taking control of this church.
Yep.
You know, it seems like this great religious and movement. And it was one family taking power over. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yep. So power, right? Power is seized, right? That's what we're seeing here. Is they didn't go and earn the authority, right? In this case, they took it by force, right? So they took power, but if you look, so we're already at 22 minutes, so I'm going to work fast.
Oh, sorry.
No, we're good. So go and read the blog post and you can read all of my notes. So the FLDS teaches from their own words that only one man at a time holds the keys and power of the sealing power. Right. Sealing with an S. Right. So this one person holds the keys. Right. So think back to Matthew chapter 16, in which Jesus tells Peter, right, that he holds the keys to sealing and unsealing things that are in heaven, things that are on earth. That's kind of the idea that they're taking. Right. It's very Roman idea, but that's a different podcast episode. So Jesus, right? I did some searching because I have my little Greek Bible right there. It's not even a little, it's a big, very, very big Greek Bible. And the words that Jesus uses, right, when he's granting someone anything, is exousia, right? Authority, right? It literally, like the phrase that we use to when we're deciding how to translate the word is where did it go? Where did my word go? Exousia, which is most commonly translated as authority, which is the right to control or command. Right. So Jesus is giving someone the right. Right. So if you look at Matthew chapter 10, in which I think it's Matthew 10, my notes are all out of like, I'm not seeing them in the same way that they were before. I must have moved it just a little bit. In which Jesus is sending out the 12. Right. He sends the 12 and he gives them authority over the unclean spirits and sickness and death and all of these things, right? And he sends them out. Well, the word he uses is exousia. He doesn't give them power over the demons. He gives them authority, right? Which is, it, for them, was the same outcome, right? When they stood in front of an unclean spirit, they could command it in the name of Jesus, right? In the power and the authority of Jesus Christ, and it left, right? Because they held that authority. They were given that authority by Christ. Never in any of the four Gospels does Jesus say, I give you the power to do something, right? And power is being the potential of functioning in some way, right? It's a unique to you situation, right? He never gives anyone the power that he has. He gives them the authority to serve in his name. The FLDS has taken that this step further, and they hold the power of Christ, not his authority.
Well, and that's important because they don't see Christ in the same way we see Christ. They see Christ as a prophet. They use the name...
You're reading my notes.
They use the name, you know, the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints and the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints because they're trying to appear Christian. But this is definitely a difference in Christianity. And they don't see, right. They don't put Christ in the same place that we put Christ. Yeah. And because of that, so, I think he has not the same thing. So they can seize whatever they want. They don't have to put Christ above. Versus in Christianity, right. We always put Christ above. We are not equivalent to Christ.
Correct.
And their prophet can be equivalent to Christ.
So there's an interesting reason that he can be. Do you know what it is?
What's that?
The LDS Church and subsequently the FLDS Church teaches that Christ is a created being.
Okay.
Which is equivalent to humanity, right? We are created, therefore we are lesser. Christ is created, therefore he is lesser. And that is the same thing, right, that Arius taught in the late 3rd, early 4th century AD. And Arius, right, this teaching of Christ being a created being, thus not fully God, right, is the reason that we have the Council of Nicaea, in which the church came together and said, hold up, this ain't right. And anathematized Arius and all of his followers and anyone who taught the same things.
And define anathematize.
Anathematized. So anathema is a Greek word, right? Yay, Greek corner. We're going to have to figure out something for the, we'll come up with that. Anathema is a Greek term most commonly translated as cursed, right? But in the church sense, it's the separation from Christ.
So
right? It's basically the death penalty.
They got together and decided that this person can't be with Christ?
Yes.
They have the authority to do that?
Yes. Yes, because the church is the pillar and the ground of the truth. Right? It's, if you look in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15, the church is the pillar and ground of the truth. The church decides what is the truth.
I think we're getting off topic here, but I think that Jesus might argue against that the church decides who goes to heaven and who goes to hell.
That's not what we said. Hang on. You're hearing something that's not there.
Okay.
The church is saying you are outside of the truth. We will not accept this teaching, right? Therefore, you are outside of the truth. If you are outside of the truth, you are away from Christ, right? You cannot come in to us and pretend to be with Christ if you're teaching this thing that is wrong, right? But the LDS and FLDS church teaches the same thing.
Well, and again, right? This goes back to, remember, their teaching is fundamentally completely different.
Uh-huh.
In that they don't believe that God is the ultimate creator of the universe. What is it?
Right.
Now hear me quote the wrong chapter here. Isaiah 45, 43. it's 45, where God basically says he is God. There was no God before him, and there will be no God after him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Christianity, we believe God is God, the Lord God, sovereign creator of the universe. Yep. The FLDS do not. They believe that God is a God, and he's the ruler of this planet, but that eventually we could rise to the rank, the same rank that God is, and rule our own planet and create our own beings and things. So Christ could potentially do that, but Christ is not above us, is their belief. It's not above human beings, I would say. So, yeah, I don't like to hear the term separation from Christ. That is a little pretty harsh, and I don't. We could argue back and forth what the church would say about that. Separation from the church is a whole other story.
But the church is the body of Christ.
Yes, but separation from Christ implies a lot of things that you said I didn't hear, but it implies a lot of those things.
Just points them out. So, beyond the theological side of things, right? They're theological errors. For their prophet to have done the things that he has done, particularly Warren, who's in jail for life plus 20 years.
I like that it's life plus 20 years. I mean,
the fruit that I see is rotting on the tree. The things that he has done, right? Jesus tells us, you know, that to beware of false prophets because we'll know them by their fruit. The fruit of Warren Jeffs is rotten. I tried to find something wholesome and good that they've done for the world, but I can't find it.
No, I think that
might just be because of all the bad press, but I can't find anything.
Well, solidly I don't know good. If the bar is even so high as good for the world. We didn't have to go that high. It still can't fill it, you know, good for themselves. Even. Right. I think some of the followers have truly wanted to be devoted, but even then, I think it's really for their own self purposes. And Warren is just the epitome of that. He's just the absolute shining example. And I think that as you look through their history, they got worse and worse. And that was the only conclusion that was going to happen with teachings like this. It can only get worse. I don't know if there ever will be a successor to Warren, but we should mention again, this group still exists and he's still in power, even though he's imprisoned. I don't know what will happen when he eventually dies, as all men do. They don't believe that he will. Maybe they'll die off before he does. He keeps getting harsher and harsher with them. Maybe he'll excommunicate enough of them where they won't exist anymore. I don't know. So before we get to our conclusion, or as part of that, do we want, I know we're coming up on time here. Do we want to look at our determination? Is this a cult? I don't think it's a big question, but I think it's important we go through and look at the list a little bit.
Yeah. I think we should. Do you want to start with the social issues that you jotted down?
What social issues did I jot down?
Their centralized authority.
Oh, yeah. Well, they did have centralized authority in the prophet, right?
Yep.
They do versus they. They believe they're the only ones. It's hard to say go into heaven because they don't believe in heaven in exactly the same way. But they do in intermediary terms. And it's definitely they believe they're the only ones that's right. That's the same with the elitism. Definitely misplaced authority. I don't even know what the other big word means.
Soteriological. Yes. There's salvation. There's salvation issues.
So I feel like
which we talked
two through
about.
Four, two through five are all kind of the same thing because it all together. They're just wrong in that stuff. They definitely do the modification of vocabulary. Yep. So they change terms and they kind of have their own terms. Also, I mentioned this in the social issues thing. Have you noticed that a lot of them talk the same way? This has to do with a lot of that communal living. They talk in a very soft, kind voice.
Yeah.
They don't raise their voice. They don't get super excited about things. They just keep it very all calm and even keel. The very opposite way of the way I talk, which is probably a little more harsh and definitely more Southern. So they have their own vocabulary, and they change some of their concepts. They've even changed some of the concepts they teach over time to centralize that authority more and more.
Right.
So I think they definitely qualify as a cult.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
They're a fairly large cult, but definitely a cult.
Yeah. And I mean, I really think that they fit, you know, 5 out of 5, right? Every one of our target metrics, right? They hit.
So what do we call that? Glasses of Kool-Aid?
Glasses of Kool-Aid is what you call it.
The Kool-Aid Corporation would like us to mention it was Flavor-Aid, not Kool-Aid.
Right.
In the mass suicides / murders. Mm-hmm. They have not
murder
suicided yet, but they very well could.
True.
If Warren were to decide that was going to happen. He has effectively cut off the breeding, and so there will be no more of them born, and nobody can join, and nobody else is getting married. So they've not suicided, but they're not continuing on.
They're not going to grow.
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure. Yep. Well, any final words you'd like to share about this?
Well, I want to point out, right, if you who are listening, right, find yourself in a group that has this idea that one man, right, runs everything, run and hide, right? Look at the fruit, look at the theology, and ask yourself, is this right? Does it match up with what history has said the church or whatever other group that you might be in says that it should be, right? And if not, maybe it's time to step away, find somewhere else to be.
Okay, we'll end it right there. Thank y'all for listening today.
Thank y'all.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.